Our Bibles then for our second reading, and we'll find that in Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaids. And they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow, and from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hast the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and thy noise of the vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be removed. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord. I will also make it a possession for the bittern and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the besom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts. The Lord of hosts hath sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden depart from off their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? In the year that King Ahaz died was this burden. Rejoice thou not, whole Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery, flying serpent. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in safety. And I will kill thy root with famine, and he shall slay thy remnant. Howl, O gate, cry, O city, thou whole Palestina art dissolved. For there shall come from the north a smoke, and none shall be alone in his appointed times. What shall one then answer the messengers of the nation, that the Lord hath founded Zion, and the poor of his people shall trust in it? May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. Well, it's a somewhat lengthy chapter speaking of the demise, not this time of Babylon particularly, but of the king of Babylon in the most part, or for its most part. And I want to disabuse you of something as we come to this passage before we go on, and that is that down in verse 12, we have this, we have this name, Lucifer. And I want to make sure you understand how that word, how that name, that title got into the narrative here and how it really doesn't belong. As much as I appreciate the work of the Authorized Version and its translators, this is one of those points where I think they missed it. And that's okay, because we have everything we need to tell us how and why they missed it and why we don't want this as a competent translation. So what is the word Lucifer? Where does it come from? It comes to our language out of the Latin. And in Latin, it's not a name. It's an entity. It's a thing. And it means a morning star. Or, you know, there are times during the year when you can look to the east in the morning and to the west in the evening. And you will see not only the sun, but you'll see Venus, very bright, low in the horizon. There are those that believe that what is being spoken of here is this morning star. And it is an interesting illustration to think about it, because what is the sin of the king of Babylon here? Well, that he's going to ascend and be right next to the sun, to the brightest light, that he's going to arrogate to himself a position that is indeed commensurate with the brightest light of all, that he's going to make his throne or place his throne above the stars of heaven. And so what we have is we have a perversion of a proper understanding here. People look at that and they say, Lucifer, that's going to be Satan, and we're really not talking about the king of Babylon here, we're talking about Satan himself. That's a bad interpretation of this passage. Number one, the word Lucifer is not a proper name. It comes to us because when the Authorized Version translators were translating out of the Hebrew, there was a traditional attachment to the word Lucifer. They brought it into the text. It has since that time become the name of the devil. And so, or some have ascribed it to the devil based on a misinterpretation of this passage and in the Latin before that time. And so it is a perversion then of this passage to ascribe it to Satan. What they did was they came along to a Hebrew word that they didn't really understand. It may have been a difficult word. It's not used very often in the Hebrew. And it means that morning star. I will tell you also that in 2 Peter chapter 1, in the Latin Vulgate, when it says, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your heart, guess what? Lucifer appears in that passage too. Because Lucifer is simply a word that means day star. It's not a proper name for the prince of the devils. It's never been. It's a Latin term that worked its way through some weakness in our Authorized Version's translation of the Hebrew there at that point. And they inserted then the Latin word rather than transliterating the Hebrew word. They transliterated the familiar Latin and brought it in at this point in Isaiah chapter 14. And it had developed a traditional understanding of being the name of Satan. No, it's not Satan. It is simply Morning Star. And if you remember what the sin of Nebuchadnezzar was, and then Belshazzar to follow him, it was exactly what has been described here in Isaiah chapter 14. Arrogating to himself the prerogatives of divinity. Calling himself that God of heaven. Requiring that people fall down to worship his image. In this and in many more things, Nebuchadnezzar certainly more than adequately fits the bill of the description here of Isaiah chapter 14 of the king of Babylon. And then you remember what Belshazzar, his son, did, at least, or his grandson, at least what we know he did for sure, that in the midst of a drunken party, he commanded those vessels that had been shut up since the days Nebuchadnezzar carried them out of Egypt. Sorry, out of Jerusalem into Babylonia. They had been shut up all that time, not for Belshazzar. Oh no, bring them in and let's drink wine in bowls out of the vessels that belong to the God of the Hebrews. Let's arrogate ourselves in power and authority over him. And so what happened to Belshazzar? Well, we know what happened. He didn't survive that night. He didn't see the next morning. It was that very night that he came to nothing. So, with that then as an introduction to the passage, it becomes very, very clear, very simple to understand what's going on here. First of all, in verses 1 through 3, we have a comfort for the people of God, that those who once oppressed them, that they will become their oppressors, that the Lord will completely turn the tables on the Babylonians. Again, we're still talking about the king of Babylon, the lamentation of the king of Babylon and the nation, the city-state, or the nation-state of Babylon as well. And so that's the first thing. As the people of God will, they have not yet, but they will be carried away captive. Again, we have very exacting, predictive prophecy here, which speaks of the divinity of the narrative. And so they will be carried away, but notice they will return as well. And when they return, they will rule over their oppressors. Well, didn't that happen even before they returned? I mean, what was Daniel doing there in Babylonia? Wasn't he ruling over his oppressors? In fact, wasn't he made one of three rulers in the kingdom? And then beyond that, elevated to president above the other two? He was in the days of Darius. Even before that, in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, because the quote-unquote spirit of the holy God was in him and he could interpret dreams, Nebuchadnezzar made him ruler over much, even within his own kingdom. And so notice how the prophecy comes to pass, not only in the days of Daniel, but afterward as well. All right, so then in verse 4, we take up this protest, this proverb, against the king of Babylon, how hath the oppressor ceased, and so on. In this section, then, we have several things. The charges are read in verses 4 through 6, that he is an oppressor, that he struck the people with a continuous stroke, that he is unrelenting, and that he ruled in anger. The sentence is read, somewhat overlapping. The Lord has broken his staff, because the Lord rules in the affairs of men. Although he himself was a persecutor, he will now be persecuted by others. And then we note the response of that in 7 and 11, 7 through 11, the fir trees rejoice. The dead mock, as it were, the once great king. His pomp is laid down and the worms have their fill. And that's 7 through 11. Listen to what Calvin says about the name Lucifer. Lucifer, like the sun rising. The exposition of this passage, which some have given, as if it referred to Satan, has arisen from ignorance. For the context plainly shows that these statements must be understood in reference to the king of the Babylonians. But when passages of scripture are taken up at random, and no attention is paid to the context, we need not wonder that mistakes of this kind frequently arise. Yet it was an instance of very gross ignorance to imagine that Lucifer was the king of the devils and that the prophet gave him this name. But as these inventions have no probability whatever, let us pass by them as useless fables. Very well said. All right, so this king then thought to exalt himself as a god among men. But as all who have done so before or since, they will be brought down. Herod, the papacy, all others who set themselves in competition with God will be brought down to hell. At the end of the king of Babylon is to be cast out as a branch. The death of the covenant breaker, the cursed one, spread about upon the ground with no sure burial, unlike his king peers of his age. This judgment then is from the Lord. He will destroy, tear down, and sweep the land of Babylon. The word besom is an old English word for broom. So he'll sweep it with the besom of destruction, with the broom of destruction. In very broad and prophetic terms, then, this destruction of Babylon is prophesied. And can we say, who would have thought it so? Who among the children of men could have predicted this great fall of such a great kingdom? And so we note the incredulity of those who are said to be observers. How has he fallen, this great one, right? And then finally, notice, but it will be like this no matter who they are. Those who rise up against the Lord and against his Christ and make a mockery of his gospel and his commandments will be brought low. Okay, so then we have verses 24 through 32, the end of the passage. And notice the purposes of the Lord. What great assurances that God will indeed fulfill all of his purposes here and will draw back from none. The Lord purposes, and who can disannul? It's a rhetorical question, right? Okay, so now notice we turn to something of a little bit more current. The prophet, as it were, takes his telescope and refocuses upon what is about to happen, what is going to happen a lot more nearer than the 518 destruction of the Medo-Persians. Okay, and what's going to happen? The Assyrians, who are now the threat in the land, they will be destroyed by Babylon. And so notice, this is a very interesting way to say it, but hopefully this will help you to understand what's going on in the passage. It says, now, Palestine, don't be so giddy that the Assyrians are destroyed. Those who oppressed you, because what the serpent has left, the cockatrice will come up and take. If you thought Assyria was bad, wait till Babylon comes to town, in other words. And so it is interesting the way the Lord describes that the Lord would raise up Babylon to destroy Assyria, and yet the people of the land should not. They should not rejoice because of the destruction of Assyria, because now they will be destroyed again by Babylon. And let's remember how far Babylon went. Do you remember what the Lord did? We read this in the book of Jeremiah. Okay? The people of God said what? Well, what did Jeremiah tell the people of God? Go out, be captured, go to Babylon, live there 70 years. In his time, the Lord will bring you back and he'll reestablish you in the land. But the land is going to be at rest for 70 years because of your breaking of my Sabbaths. What did they do? They said, we're going to go to Egypt instead. And they fled to Egypt. What did the Lord do when they fled to Egypt? The Lord said, you think you're safe in Egypt from Babylon? I'm going to stir up Nebuchadnezzar, and now he's coming to Egypt too. Now he's going to come to Egypt as well. And so Palestine is rejoicing. The Assyrians, they're conquered. Be careful, Palestine. Be careful, because the Lord is stirring up something that is going to be much worse than Palestine. So do not rejoice. Do not rejoice in that. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon the nations, for the Lord of hosts has purposed, and who can disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? In the year that King Ahaz died was this burden. So we know when Isaiah prophesied this prophecy, and guess what? It was long before these events took place. Over 100 years. Now, rejoice not thou Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken, for out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent. So Babylon is coming in behind the Assyrians, and that's the point. All right, so what does it, how does it end? This story of Babylon, notice verse 32. What shall one then answer the messengers of the nation that the Lord hath founded Zion, and the poor of his people shall trust in it? That over all of this destruction, the Lord has a purpose for his people in it, and they should not fear. Thus ends Isaiah chapter 14. Let's stand.